And the particular authors that I used in my study were Murray Hutchinson out of Australia. Her model was such that there are ways that you can predict in a culture if bullying is going to happen. And those were really prevalent. And so we correlated the antecedents, the predictors of bullying, to the bullying acts, to the surgical never events. And this is what was so important, because it was like, it's not just about what happens to the individual, what happens to these patients that we're caring for. And every last one of the surgical never events correlated to bullying.
Welcome to Culture Change RX, the podcast for healthcare professionals that are committed to creating a thriving workplace culture, improving the experiences of employees and patients, and ultimately unlocking their organization's next level of potential. I'm Sue Tetzloff, your host and co-founder of Capstone Leadership Solutions. Join me and my insightful guests each week as we share actionable insights for navigating the crucial people side of the business of healthcare. Subscribe now for a weekly dose of Culture Change RX. Now let's dive into this week's conversation, where culture change takes center stage. Welcome to another guest episode on the Culture Change RX podcast. Today I have Joneel, and I'm going to let her right out of the gate introduce herself, and then we are going to dive into another great episode. Welcome, Joneel.
Well, I'm tickled to be here and tickled to support the work that you're doing. I've been a nurse for almost 50 years. I was a diploma grad. I went back to University of Michigan, got my BSN, got an MBA, got a doctorate in organizational leadership. My clinical, I bounced back and forth between bedside and leadership. I spent the majority of my time in leadership. I spent 10 years working at the advisory board company in Washington, D.C. But again, I had that opportunity to do that, to bounce back and forth, to become the leader that I wanted to be. And I always felt like my job was to nurse the nurses that worked for me.
I love that too, is that, you know, it just describes to me and reminds me of how much nursing, and in particular nursing leadership, how diverse it is, what an opportunity it presents. We can do so many things with that. When I had family members decide to go into the field of nursing, I'm like, well, you'll never be disappointed with the options that are available to you clinically, in leadership, in many other ways. So I know that you have a real passion, interest, and even, you know, a special method and model and matrix and those kind of things that you've really developed over this amazing career that you've had related to behavior in the workplace, which is obviously really important when we talk about the culture of our workplaces. So I would love for you to just provide that introduction to some of the core things that you've been working on that really help in this way in our workplaces.
Sure. Real briefly, I'll tell you my very first bullying story, which happened years ago when I was not a new nurse, but I was new to the operating room. And I had finished pretty much all of my orientation. So I was in vascular surgery, which was next to the last. And my preceptor was scrubbed and I was circle. And we were doing a AAA. And back in the day, we're talking wide open.
Yeah.
And we also know that the longer the patient stays on the table, increased morbidity and mortality. Mm-hmm. So we were doing this procedure. And my preceptor, working with the chief of vascular surgery, said, I need to go get blah, blah, blah retractor. So I hustled my little self around and I tore up case carts and I called central processing and I went everywhere looking for this. And I was out of the room 12 and a half minutes. I tracked it and I got back to the room and I stood at the foot of the table and I looked up and I went, I can't find it anywhere. And my preceptor turns to the chief of surgery, pats him on the hand and goes, don't worry, she doesn't know what she's doing. So I could feel the wheels of the bus going over me as I got ran over. And I stood there going, finish the case, finish the case. Well, the key point of this is after the case, the director of central processing came up to me and said, you know what? She knew that that retractor was out for repair. So not only did she embarrass me, she put that patient at risk. I wish I could say that was the one and only time I was ever, quote unquote, bullied. And I think we have to remember that there's a spectrum of bullying. There are people that are rude, that are just plain old rude. There are people that are true bullies. And the definitive point there is that a true bully is out to get you. Mm-hmm. It's directed at you. So my career progressed, and I spent the majority of my career in the ER and the OR. Those are my two loves. And realized when I was finishing my doctoral dissertation that I was going to study bullying in nursing. Way back when we talked about nurses eat their young. Well, that's not a new phenomenon. That's been going on forever. And it's time we stopped it. Mm-hmm. And the particular authors that I used in my study were Murray Hutchinson out of Australia. Her model was such that there are ways that you can predict in a culture if bullying is going to happen. And those were really prevalent. And so we correlated the antecedents, the predictors of bullying, mm-hmm. to the bullying acts, to the surgical never events. Mm-hmm. And this is what was so important, because it was like, it's not just about what happens to the individual, what happens to these patients that we're caring for. And every last one of the surgical never events correlated to bullying. Wrong patient, wrong site, wrong procedure, retained instrument, and death of an ASA1 patient.
Wow. Yeah.
And this has been going on for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so I found what all of us know, and we go, well, why aren't we fixing this? And there's a lot of other theories about the oppression of nursing, that our education was co-opted by the medical model. And I came of age in the late 70s and early 80s when the women's movement was there, and we as nurses had to prove who we were, and we had to have nursing diagnoses and all these things. And we lost sort of that ability to be our own autonomous profession. And I think that was another piece of this entire complex problem. And I wish I could say right today, I've got the answer for it. I don't. I have some pieces. I have some other things that I can assist with. But going back to Hutchinson's model, Murray Hutchinson, when you look at the culture of an organization, there are things that you can figure out, that you can look at, that you can measure, that are indicators. And if these things are present in your culture, you can pretty much be sure. And things like normalization of the behavior, normalization of the bullying. People, she used the word mates. And so because that was very Australian. So I asked if I could change it to the word friends. People have friends at different levels of the organization, that policies and procedures are used as weapons, mm-hmm. versus, you know, all of that. And I'll give you my last example of this is, after I remarried and moved to a small town, I took a job. They created a directorship for me as an OR director, an ER and OR director. I'd been there 2 weeks, and we got a temporary denial of accreditation. Never in my 40-something career has that ever happened to me. And 80% of the citations were in the ER and the OR. So I assumed that was God sending me there to fix this place. I figured, I can do this. Well, I found out very early on that the culture dictated by the CEO was not conducive to making the changes necessary. There was collusion with the director, with the medical director. There was bad behavior all across the board. And I had been, as I mentioned, I'm primed, I'm ready. Well, I got an email from the CEO that said, until you've been here 6 months, keep your mouth shut. Now, that is not a culture where anybody wants new ideas. And so finally, it got to just the breaking point. Where a lot of things had occurred. We'd hired a consultant. He refused to take the consultant's report. Like I said, this culture was toxic. And when there's a toxic culture at the top, the culture is not going to be conducive for healthy. I had gained 30 pounds, had 7 ulcers. I thought, this is ridiculous. But what it was I had gotten to the place where I could not tolerate anymore. And the CEO, in a public forum, to a point of, it was embarrassing, his behavior, the CNO and the chief medical officer. And I went into the CNO's office. I said, this is craziness. What are we doing? What are we doing here? And she looked at me and bless her heart, she said, don't do something where he makes me fire you. I need you. And I thought, oh, this is for the dang birds. I went home, and my husband and I, who never fight, had a hellacious just because he said, I'm sick of this. I walk around on eggshells. I never know whether you're going to be up, whether you're going to be down. I don't know what to do with it. I don't know what to do for you. Cause you know, husbands want to fix it. Well, that night I had a deep, dark night of the soul. I reread my doctoral dissertation. I went, I'm not even doing what I told other people to do. So I made an appointment with the corporate vice president of HR, and took in my documentation and took in all of my information. And, you know, I cleaned up my office because who knows if I was even going to be able to go back. You don't know when you...
Nope.
And again, people ask me afterwards, Joneel, how did you have the courage to do that?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, there's some leadership courage.
Yes. It's like, no, this is it. This is it. So yeah. I went there and I presented halfway through my thing, and the vice corporate took me by the hands and said, Joneel, nobody should work under these conditions. Mm-hmm. And he said, here's my card. I don't know what's going to happen, but if there's any real or perceived retribution, I'm available 24/7. And there was a lot of things that went on behind the scenes. I don't really know all the details of that. All I do know is that 9 days later, he was walked out of the building.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, so wow. I consider that corporate courage.
Yeah.
And we're gonna touch on that in just a quick second. But I think my story is not unlike many others of people that have come to me. And, you know, I have a coaching practice for nurses and who have been bullied and who are facing this. And as we mentioned a couple of minutes ago, there is an individual, you have to take care of yourself personally. Mm-hmm. You got to figure out what that looks like, how to put on your bullying PPE, how to take care of yourself, how to protect your precious soul, because it can be sucked right. The life gets sucked right out of you. And then you have to figure out, do I have a voice? What's my voice in all of this? And then are you willing to do what needs to be done? And courage is acting in the face of fear. It's not that you're not going to be afraid. And that's, I think, a piece that we have to make sure that people understand. Was it courageous for me to march in there? Oh, I'm sure. But it was also, I had had enough.
Yeah. 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 Unfortunately, it does seem like sometimes we have to get to that point before the courage finds us.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think in our profession, we want to deliver great patient care. Mm-hmm. Great patient care. That's always been our focus. And then people will say, oh, don't say anything because it'll impact your ability to take care of people. It's almost like gaslighting us.
Yeah.
Like, don't do that because it'll hurt the patients. Well, if we are not at our absolute best as leaders, as care providers, we're not doing anybody any good. And I had done a quick survey the other day of nurses, how they feel when they pull into the parking lot.
Yeah.
And the word that came out the most was dread.
Dreading
what they're going to face, what they're going to be up against. And
it's not their patient assignments.
No.
Really not. It's not the cases they're assigned to today. It's not the patients they're assigned to today. It's not who's going to walk through the ER door that they're afraid of for the most part.
Yep.
A little bit of that, maybe, because we hear of even violence from patients now and family members, which is another whole sad thing affecting our workplaces. But inside, we do it to ourselves.
Oh,
right.
For sure.
Yeah.
And why I so support the work that you're doing and the work that we did at the advisory board is that nurse leaders, being a bedside nurse and being a nurse leader is a complete different skill set.
Oh, it sure is.
And somebody you know, I talk about my, you know, this goes way back. My very first leadership role was a permanent charge second shift in the emergency room. And the nurse manager called 4 or 5 of us in and said, you know, I really need somebody to take this permanent job. And everybody else took a step back. And there I was like, what the hell?
Now I'm it.
I'm it. You know, and I actually realized that I didn't have the skill set.
Yes.
So I figured I better get an MBA. I better figure out if I'm going to run this business, I better add that.
Yes.
Now, the one thing I will tell nurse leaders is that you already have a process improvement plan given to you.
The
nursing process.
Yes, so good at doing lots of, you can do so much with that, can't you?
Yes. And I tell nurse leaders, your patient is your unit.
Yeah.
And you would never give insulin until you check the blood sugar. Don't ever make a change until you collect data to figure out where you're at.
Yes. It is so paralleled. It's just, it does equip us to be leaders if we think in that way, for sure. Yes. You know what I do see, like, and I know that you're kind of alluding to this, is that as clinicians, when we rise up into leadership, it actually probably is way easier for us and more comfortable for us. It doesn't take as much courage for us to make changes or improvements on things that are related to patient care. Like, we're going to change our medication system and our documentation system and our protocol for this and that. You know, when it involves those kind of nursey things or clinical things or process things, we're all good with that. But when it comes to leading behaviors, when it comes to leading people and our civility and our teamwork and our, those kind of, we think like, okay, how are we going to learn that? Yeah. And how are we actually, can we do anything about this? Should we do anything? Is that our job? Like, really, like, that's the piece. And what I've learned, and you might agree, is that it matters the most. Mm-hmm. Like, our ability as a leader to lead that part of our unit, our department, our organization, the behaviors, it actually can make, you even mentioned it, safety. You know, like, it's hard to have safe patient care.
Yeah.
If we have bad behaviors, hard to have a great patient experience. If we have bad behavior, it's hard to have employee retention. If we have bad behavior, like, there's so many bad things on the other side of bad behavior. Mm-hmm. Yet as leaders, we're like, oh, wow, I didn't sign up for this. Just taking this quick break to let you know that the registration deadline is coming up soon for our Healthcare Executive Forum that is happening on June 12th and 13th, 2024 at Mission Point Resort on beautiful Mackinac Island here in Michigan. Join us for these 2 days of immersive learning, engaging discussions, and networking opportunities. Go to capstoneleadership.net. This year's topic is maximizing momentum with trust, teamwork, and time. Registration deadline is May 20th. Get your spot today. CapstoneLeadership.net.
And you know, and I don't know about your career path, but the hardest move was to lead people I had worked side by side
with. Oh, yes, 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 yes.
Oh, mother of pearl.
Jamie calls that from bestie to boss. Right?
Oh, it's so painful.
Yeah.
And nobody prepares you for that.
No.
Nobody prepares you for that. But going back to this eliminating the bad behavior.
Yes.
And I've created a model called the 3C model that I think if you can follow these steps, the first one is there must be a code of conduct that is clear, that is enforceable and enforced across the board, across the board. That's your standard. Your standard. You know, that's what, and everybody is held to it. So a code of conduct. The next thing is to collect objective data.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be objective. And it really should, and I've got a separate tool about how to collect this data, but it needs to be, you know, the who, what, when, where. What was the impact on patient care? And this is what I think is real crucial, because a lot of times people would come to me and say, oh, Sally Sue was so awful to me. She did this, she did that. I go, okay, let's figure out what happened from that. You know, I'm going to put that down a little bit. Let's figure out, were you in the bathroom and your meds were late? Were you not able to round with Dr. So-and-so because you were so distraught and you were Twitter pated and you couldn't function. So what was the impact on your ability to deliver patient care? Then the next thing, and this people kind of push back at me, is what was the impact on the organization?
Mm-hmm.
Were you so upset that you had to stay 2.5 hours overtime at $40 an hour? You're looking at $100 that cost the organization because of this bullying.
Mm-hmm.
And that one usually takes people a little bit of coaching to figure out what's the impact on the organization. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing, part of this objective data, And if you think about it, this is exactly what I did when I went to see the vice president of HR.
Yes.
What was the final straw was what the impact was on me. I did not lead with, oh my God, this guy's made me gain 30 pounds and 7 ounces. It was like third or fourth down the list, you know, but a lot of times we lead with me.
Yeah.
Me, where I'm going to challenge you to say this behavior and describe it objectively. Don't say Sally Sue was really awful. Sally Sue said these yes. words in a voice that was so loud, people in room 426 heard it.
Yes. Yes.
Do you see the difference then?
Yes. Oh,
and then other things going back to this data collection is people will say, oh my God, my schedule got changed. And do you have a copy of the schedule that was out Friday and you came back on Monday and it was changed and it favors Sally Sue?
Yes.
Kind of
yes.
a thing. So make sure that you're, and you're talking to the drama. And I don't want to say I'm a drama queen, but I can get myself into a state. Mm-hmm. Make sure you bring yourself down to object. We do objective data when we take care of our patients. Mm-hmm. It's the same in this situation. So then with this data, there are some situations where it needs to be escalated up the chain immediately. Mm-hmm. Shift supervisor, director, whoever. Right, this happened right today. There are other times, and this is, I guess, going back to that CEO situation, I kept that data. I mean, there wasn't anything I could do at the moment, but I kept it. And I could see trends. Mm-hmm. And I could see patterns. And mm-hmm. eventually I could see how we weren't able to make the changes necessary for us to get our commission because of this toxic culture.
Yeah.
So first one is code of conduct. Second one is to collect objective data. And the third one, and we've talked about this. This is the hardest one, is an organization or individual must have courage.
Courage, yeah. Yes. You know, when you said the word courage, I thought about how many times myself as a leader, but also coaching and training and supporting leaders that are managing a bully.
Yeah.
Or somebody who's chronic, I use the word chronic persistent, you know, negatively impactful on civil behavior, you know, like
yeah, you're so you nice know. About it. I would just call him a witch with it.
I know. So, but like when I'm thinking about one example where I was, you know, supporting a leader, a director of anesthesia that had to have this conversation with a CRNA yep. who was 69 years old. She'd truly been a self-professed bully hurt since teenagehood. Did Brian ever think he was going to be able to change her? I mean, he really, as her boss, said, you know, oh my goodness. But to your point, they had a code of conduct. They did. She wasn't following it, consistently not following it. Number two, the data was showing that there was some real big problems with her not following it. People didn't want to be assigned to work with her in her rooms. They would fight over the assignments and call in sick if they were assigned that week with her. They wouldn't call her into the ER or OB to do services when she was on call for anesthesia. They'd delay getting an epidural or, you know, get help with an IV or intubation because they didn't want her in their unit, right?
Yep. Yep.
I mean, like we're talking about the data, the collection of the data mm-hmm. of what the impact was. And then now Brian has to have the courage to say, we got this code of conduct. Here's the subjective data that says you're not following it. We can follow the trail of negative impact on staff, nurses leaving work in tears, patients, family members leaving her experience yep. in tears. Co-workers leaving in tears, you know, whatever. And then Brian having to have the courage. I called it the tango. It was like, it was hours of preparation for this yeah. dance he had to have with Rachel about her behavior to say, nope, you know, like this must change or you can no longer work here.
Because that's that last part is he enforced a consequence for the behavior. Because it's behavior.
That's another C. Sure. Hey, and that's maybe the most important one. Courage right. to offer up the consequence.
Yeah. Yeah. And the consequence is to the individual. Now, I can remember working with an organization where their OB docs were out of control, completely out of control. And they finally, you know, did the same thing, behavior standard consequence. What they put in place is that this OB group also took hospital calls and they made the consequence that if there is a negative behavior from anyone in this group, you will not get your call time.
Oh,
your call pay. You'll still take call for your patient, but guess where the consequence was?
In talk about
Mm-hmm. So understanding there
only are our best behaving people get to have the privilege to earn this money to be on the schedule and in. Yeah.
I knew of another organization and they had one orthopedic surgeon who was a complete and utter turd, and they were losing staff. And the closest I think was probably Minneapolis. I'm not sure, but they had to go miles to get good orthopedic services. And the leadership of the organization had the courage to say, you can't come here anymore.
Yeah.
Knowing that the downstream effect is they had to work harder to keep their, make arrangements and all that sort of stuff, but they couldn't have this person, this toxic individual. And that's what it is. It's just this pus that's out there.
You know what? You bring up another corporate courage point here that we know is true, but right now it just really hit me as, I was talking about Brian as the director of anesthesia needing to have the courage. You had to have the courage, but when you think about an organization saying to their entire OB group or to this orthopod that their community really needs, for their care, whatever. In my hospital, it was an ENT. We had built a multi-million dollar program around this one doc.
Yeah.
And he had to be fired for his behavior after 2 years. And it took 5 more years to replace him. And that took courage for the organization to say, we built a multi-million dollar program and we have to put it on pause because we can't have this behavior in our organization. Not many organizations are going to be that courageous.
Correct.
We know they're not.
We know. We have evidence.
We know they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Some organizations have had that bully in their organization for 10, 20, 30 years. And that bully gets a pass because they have a certain skill set.
Sure.
Usually they do have a great skill set.
Oh,
unfortunately. Absolutely.
I worked with an open heart surgeon and I used to say his hands were blessed, but his mouth was cursed. Yeah.
I'm thinking of several examples that fit that bill, and I think to the point is that we think that because they are skilled and their skills are needed by our hospital, by our clinic, by our community, that we have to lower our standards or not demand our standards, uphold our standards for the behaviors that their exceptional skill or need for their skill gives them the pass to misbehave. And I'm an and person. I want it all, good behavior and great skill,
my favorite surgeons, I probably have 6 of them I can count. Their mothers were OR nurses. The ones who helped move the patients at the end of the case. Again, and that's where let's bring this right home to the leadership moment. What that leadership moment is when this incivility and this toxicity is occurring is to take yourself above and look at it clearly.
Yeah.
And say, this behavior is not in alignment with what we believe.
Mm-hmm.
Period. And again, I'm a big believer you separate the who from the do.
Mm.
We had this one surgeon who would be doing mission trips and all this sort of stuff. He was a great guy. He was a jackass in the OR.
Mm-hmm.
And separate the who from the do. Mm. And that's a way where you can say, this behavior is unacceptable. Not you are unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
You're a nice enough fella, all the things.
Yeah.
This behavior. And that I think is really crucial for you being objective when you describe it.
It's great parenting advice too with our children. I love you, but I don't love this behavior.
Exactly. And again, as leaders, we get sucked into it oftentimes.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest, oftentimes it's directed at us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There is no pixie dust. There's no one conversation. There's no one consequence or intervention that magically. It is about having that conduct, really holding tight to it. And then it's that consistency of being willing to compliment when you see the behavior getting better,
yep.
call them out when you see it reappearing. It's kind of like this, it does take a lot of effort and not just courage, but it also takes that commitment and consistency that once you go after it, like yeah. let's say you're committed and you say, we are going to improve this behavior. You are going to improve this behavior. I'm going to support you and help you in the ways that I can as your leader. But if it doesn't change, there is this consequence. And some organizations, like for-profit businesses, they know the cost of this and they won't even put that much work and effort to try yeah. to save an employee. But when we're talking about a skilled surgeon or a real specialty, you know, nurse or technician or whatever, it's like, you know, I know that hospital was really happy to, in quotes, save that CRNA. And she would say that, like, we did a case study and presented their case to a national workshop at their willingness to say, yeah. this really was possible to change.
Yeah.
And she could hardly believe it. And she was tickled more than the organization or her boss was, right? Yeah. One of the things I remember, Joneel, that she said was, why didn't a leader help me sooner? She goes, I actually feel better as a human being at home and at work
yeah.
now that I have these standards and I know they're not negotiable and I must follow them. And when I do, I actually feel better. I love the relationships I have now. Perfect. It feels better for me at work too. I feel better about myself at the end of the day or a week. And she's like, why didn't somebody intervene and help me sooner? Right?
Wow.
That really is a message, I think, to all of us as leaders and organizations is you think that they really want us to leave them alone. But these are maybe cries for help. And maybe we can't always figure it out. It won't always work. And they have to want it to work and be willing. But man,
yeah,
it can happen. It can happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great story to wrap this all up on.
Well, this has been a delightful conversation. I enjoy our conversations together. I'm glad to have this opportunity to record this one and offer it up to our audience for Culture Change RX. I just think that we probably can't talk enough on this forum related to behaviors in the workplace and efforts to make them better. It is hard, but it's very important work. And I appreciate your contributions to this important work. Thanks, Joneel.
Happy to help.
Yes. Thank you so much. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Culture Change RX. If you found value in today's episode and you are a believer in fostering change in healthcare, join us in making a difference. Follow, rate, and review our podcast on your favorite platform. Share it with colleagues and your network. Together, we can make a lasting impact. Until next week, keep inspiring positive change.